So I said it at the start, but I'll say it again. Happy Mother's Day. And big up all the mums out there. Yeah, let's applaud them. I like that. Thank you to all mums, all grandmas, all spiritual mothers. We love you and we need you in our church. You are definitely a blessing. And so as it's Mother's Day, we're gonna focus on... Can I give you those? Is that all right? Just to move that out of the way. As it's Mother's Day, we're gonna focus on a mother in the Bible. And we're going to be in 1 Samuel 1. So we're gonna turn there. So if you've got a Bible, turn there. If you don't, pop your hand up. Stefan will bring you one. And before we dive into anything, I'm also aware that when we talk about mothers, or we have a morning like we've had where we're just thanking God for babies, and for some, it can be hard in the room. It can be hard. And so I just want to say your experiences are valid, that they are important this morning. And I pray that even in this, if it is hard, that you will find joy and hope in God this morning, because the mother we are looking for, the mother we are looking at this morning is someone that you might be able to relate to, if you found this morning hard. And so this woman didn't start off as a mother. She didn't have an easy life. She didn't have even the greatest of marriages. But her faith was one for the ages. Her faith was one that lasted the test of time. And so whoever you are, whether you are male or female, right, this morning, hear what 1 Samuel says. Hear the encouragement of 1 Samuel 1 this morning. And so today I want us to focus on the character in the Bible called Hannah. We're going to focus on her this morning. And you may know the story, all right? So if you've been in church a while, if you've been in church for a really long time, you'll be like, I know this story. And it's a great story. But some of you, I'm aware, you may not. you might not know this story. And so she lived during the time, as Judges 21 puts it. So this is how it was for Hannah. This is what Judges 21 says. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. That's the time that she's living in. She's living in the ancient world where she lived in a time of complete chaos, utter selfishness, and there was a boredom from the people of God towards God. And her life was just not easy. It wasn't easy at all. She's childless, and so she's quite upset by this. But what is made worse is the taunts of her husband's other wife, all right? That was culturally acceptable, but that was not God's plan. That's not what God had put in place. And so she's living in a different time. But her husband, he tries to console her, he tries to be helpful, but he says some really insensitive things. We can relate to that. But what does she do? I just want to look at what does she do about that. What does she do in her tears? What does she do in the taunting, in the pain? And so we're going to be in 1 Samuel. We're going to go from verse 7. I'm going to read from verse 7, and you can follow us on the screen. This went on year after year, that whenever Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, her rival, interesting word to use there, provoked her till she wept and would not eat. Her husband Elkanah would say to her, Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons? Great line. Well done, mate. Once, when they had finished eating and drinking at Shiloh, Hannah stood up. Now Eli the priest was sitting on his chair by the doorpost of the Lord's house. In her deep anguish, Hannah prayed to the Lord, weeping bitterly. And she made a vow, saying, Lord Almighty, if you will only look on your servant's misery and remember me, and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head. As she kept on praying to the Lord, Eli observed her mouth.
Hannah was praying in her heart and her lips were moving, but the voice was not heard. Eli thought she was drunk and said to her, "How long are you going to stay drunk? Put away your wine." "Not so, my lord," Hannah replied. "I am a woman who is deeply troubled. I've not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I have been praying here out of my great anguish and grief." Eli answered, "Go in peace, and may the Lord, the God of Israel, grant you what you've asked of him." She said, "May your servant find favor in your eyes." Then she went away and ate something, and her face was no longer downcast. Early the next morning, they arose and worshipped before the Lord and went back to their home in Ramah. Elkanah made love to his wife Hannah, and the Lord remembered her. So in the course of time, Hannah became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She named him Samuel, saying, "Because I asked the Lord for him." Hannah is barren and being ridiculed for this. She then becomes pregnant with a child who is going to be a great prophet, one of the greatest prophets in Israel's history, during a time of complete chaos in Israel. And there are not many people in Scripture who don't really have anything negative said about them. Samuel is one of those people. That's who she is mother to. What is it about Hannah that makes her the right person to birth a great prophet? What is it that makes her godly mother potential? What is it about her? And so we're going to look at three areas this morning. We can pick up loads of other pieces, but we're just going to look at three. You may still have questions from this chapter after, and that's fine. I'd love to chat to you about that. But I just want to pick out three particular areas that we're going to look at. And so the first one we see in verses 8 and 18, and it's this, that she trusted that her story was not over. Firstly, she trusted that her story wasn't over. If you look at verse 8, I've written verse 7 on there for some reason. If you look at verse 8 for a moment, in verse 8, we see her being mocked by Peninnah to the point where she doesn't want to go to this celebration. So they're all going to go to what is the tabernacle. They're going to go there. They're going to worship and enjoy it and drink, and it's going to be great, and they're going to eat together. But she doesn't want to go. She doesn't want to celebrate. She doesn't want to eat. Her husband asks, "Why not? Why don't you want to join in? Why don't you want to eat?" Well, it's a silly question, isn't it? Like, he knows why. She's just asking a really annoying question. He's a silly man. But there is something that happens between verse 8 and verse 18. In verse 8, she's like, she wept and doesn't want to eat. And then in verse 18, it says that, "May your servant find favor in your eyes." Then she went away and ate something, and her face was no longer downcast. There is a change that happens. There's this moment. So as she's praying, as she's pouring out her pain, she makes a vow with God. She meets a priest called Eli who thinks she's drunk or something like that, but then shares that she's not enjoying her life situation. She's not enjoying her life situation one little bit. And so in all that's happened in her life, in all the anguish, in all the heartache of her situation, she was reminded that her story wasn't over. Eli is reminding her that her story isn't over. "Go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant what you have asked of him." In meeting Eli, who's not really a great guy himself, we find out later on, She is reminded of the God that she has, who the God is that she serves, the hope that she has. She's reminded that her story wasn't over. And you may be here today, you may be in moments today where you are facing disappointment, where Mother's Day, it may be the most painful day of the year for you. It may be for a host of reasons. And baby thanksgivings and child thanksgivings, that may break your heart because you really actually, I know how Hannah feels. It could be that your mental health is just so low that you feel that your story is over and you have got nothing left.
where in your life do you feel that your story is over? Where in your life do you feel that your story is over? Where have you kind of given up on God, given up on hope, given up on joy? And when we add God into the mix of our disappointment, we see that our lives have a bigger picture and a bigger purpose than we realized. That doesn't mean a life that is coming, that everything in life is going to become perfect and go the way you want just because you've put God in the mix. Right, look at what she does in verse 18. Right, she doesn't go out shouting and screaming and celebrating. Right, she's not. It doesn't say, and she lived happily ever after. It says that she went out and she ate something. When we add God into the mix of our disappointments, sometimes it just helps us do the simple things. When we add God into the mix of our disappointment, sometimes it's about doing the simple and the faithful things. Our story is not over. Note that this isn't a story about giving a woman a baby. It is more than that. Hannah believed that even in disappointment, her life had a bigger purpose, and she trusted God knew what it was. She trusted God that her story wasn't finished. She could have ignored Eli, and she could have carried on. And so a good question to ask here is how did she get to a place of faith? How did she get to a place of hope that her story wasn't over? What journey did she go on? Where did she go? Well, one part of her journey is this. She spoke honestly to God. She spoke honestly with God. In verse 10 and 11, in her deep anguish, Hannah prayed, weeping bitterly. And she made a vow saying, Lord Almighty, if you will look on your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life and no razor will ever be used on his head. In verse 10 and 11, it shows that instead of bottling up her sorrow, instead of bottling up her bitterness towards God, she cried out. She cries out with raw emotion, unfiltered emotion. And this moment of prayer and this vow that she makes, it isn't some bargaining tool. She isn't like saying, oh, well, if I give you this, you can give me this. It's not what she's doing. Right? She wasn't bargaining or making a deal. Instead, her prayer and this vow is saying, I'm totally and completely and utterly, I'm dependent on you, God. That's what I'm dependent on. It wasn't bargaining, it was surrender. It was a display of honest faith. I'm trusting you with this. And so in our Western thinking, this vow of sending her child to go and live in God's temple, we can be like, that's a bit weird. It's a bit strange. It's a bit drastic. It's a bit unloving. But really what she is doing is she's saying, no, he is yours, God. I know that he is a gift, and I want to give him back to you. And so just to say, the culture at the time, it was very different. But by dedicating her son to serve God, she showed that her deepest desire wasn't to have a child. That wasn't her deepest desire. It was a desire, but it wasn't her deepest one. Instead, it was, I want to honor God. I want to give him back to you. This vow and this prayer was a sign of trust and surrender. It was acknowledging that the child would belong to God. It is his and it's not hers. It's true of all of us. It's true of all parents. It's true of wannabe parents. Hannah was aware of where she was emotionally, but she was also aware of where she was physically. So in verse 9, we read, we sang it earlier, there's joy in the house of the Lord. She was outside, she was standing outside the house of the Lord. You could say, it could have been said, the Lord's palace. That's where she was. And so in that culture, what would have happened would be that's the place that you would go to contact and interchange between earth and heaven. It was the place which prayers and praises from earth reach heaven. And it was also thought that it was the place where messages from heaven could reach earth. She knew by standing in that place that she was in God's space. That's where she was. She knew where she was physically. She was in God's space. She knew that there was no hiding in this space. There's no hiding from my bitterness.
Honesty with God was her only option. It was the only thing that she could do. And whenever we come into God's space, that seems to be the only option, is to be honest with God, to share our hearts with him. And her honest prayer, what it did, it wasn't just, oh, you're so mean, God, why you don't give me a child? You suck. That's not what she's doing, right? In doing it, it grew her faith. It's so often the case. The book before 1 Samuel in Ruth, we see it with Naomi. Naomi does exactly the same. She brings her bitterness to God, and rather than thinking that she can hide it, and it allows her faith to grow. When we are honest with God, it means, oh, that's a moment for our faith to grow. If you've been in church for years, you know that Hannah is probably one of those great praying women of the Old Testament. But why is it? It's because she was both honest and faith-filled. She was both. She wasn't hiding her bitterness. She was honest. She wasn't complaining with God all the time. She was faith-filled. Hannah got it right. She poured out her soul to the Lord, it says in verse 15. And in doing so, she comes to know God in a deeper way than the rest of Israel did. Like I said, the time she was in, Israel was like, we do anything we want in our own sight. We can do what we like. God's boring. Don't need him. And yet she calls him the Lord of armies. She showed more understanding. She came to a place when she brought her honesty to God. She came to a place where she understood more of who God was than the whole country. Hannah is an example of the importance of gritty and persistent and anguished and honest prayers of faith. And so if you're somebody like, I'd really like to grow in my faith, then maybe you need to learn to be more honest with God. Maybe you need to be honest with God and with other Christians. Do you try to hide your bitterness? Do you try to hide your sadness? Do you say, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, all good. No worries. I'm fine. Do you try and let your faith rise alongside your honesty? So do you remain in the place of bitterness where you're like, sucks, life sucks, it's not fair? Or do you move towards a place of honesty and faith, like Hannah did? When we mix honesty and faith together, we then become... What happens is we then become vessels that God can use. When we're just honest and we don't have faith, then God can't use us in quite the same way. And when we're just complaining all the time, God can't use us. It's when we mix faith with honesty. I know, Jesus, you are better. You are better than anything in this world, but I really struggle to believe that sometimes. Will you help me? When we mix honesty and faith, that's becomes, I'm a vessel then God can use. Can use it when we mix honesty and faith together. And so I want to challenge you, if you're a Christian or not, why don't you be honest with God? Not just bitter, but honest. Why don't you see what he does? Why don't you see if there's not a change in your peace or in your hope or in your circumstance even? Why not be honest with God? Why not cry with God? There's a challenge. Why not share your emotional state with God and see if the Holy Spirit doesn't come and encounter and just comfort and bring peace in those moments. The truth is, nobody but you knows the sorrows, the griefs, the regrets in your life. We didn't read verse 5 and 6, but it says it twice. God closed Hannah's womb. It wasn't the devil. It wasn't sin. It wasn't her circumstance. It's described as God closed her womb. As strange as this sounds, her tears, God is the one who made her cry. Strange as that sounds, and sometimes God can make us cry like Hannah. And honestly, that can really suck, and some of you will know that more than me. But if Hannah's prayer of faith and honesty about her bitterness has any encouragement for us, it is this. Even in the tears, even when God has made her cry, there is available grace beyond expectation. Hannah experienced grace beyond her expectation. verse 19 and 20. Early the next morning they arose and they worshipped the Lord and then went back to their home in Ramah. In the course of time, Hannah became pregnant and gave birth to a son, and they named him Samuel because I asked of the Lord. Just to remind you, this is not a story about a woman getting a baby, all right, and getting what she wanted. This story, Hannah's experience, Hannah's life, is all pointing towards grace beyond expectation. If you were to read the rest of 1 Samuel, you will notice something. Hannah has a few more children. We don't know their names. Peninnah, her children aren't even mentioned. It's not even mentioned about her kids. We only know Samuel. We only know that child's name. The child that made her cry. When God made her cry, that's the child we know about. He's the one who's remembered. Those children born who were about of ease and comfort, they weren't like Samuel. Right? Samuel, he's the one who became the great judge of Israel. He is the one who delivered God's people. He is one of the great prophets. He was the one who had anointed the king. He is the king maker. That's who she bore. But it was the journey. It was through Hannah's honest tears before God that watered the ground for a harvest of grace beyond what she imagined. Do not underestimate your honest tears before God. If God is big enough for you to blame for your troubles, then he is big enough for you to trust in them. Say that again. If God is big enough for you to blame in your troubles, he is also big enough for you to trust in the midst of them. Follow Hannah's lead in verse 18. Even before she knew, she saw the grace of God beyond her expectation, before the baby was even born, before she became pregnant, she responded with faith and joy towards God because of his grace. Samuel stands. He is an example. He is an encouragement to us of God's grace beyond expectation. I mentioned earlier that this event, I've said it a few times, it took a place during the time of the judges. And so Israel, they're in the promised land. So Moses has been and gone. Joshua, the walls of Jericho, all that's happened. And they're now in the land. And it's total chaos. It's all gone Pete Tong. There was a good judge, there was a bad judge. There was a good judge, there was a bad judge. And it's just total carnage and chaos. And it seems that the writer of 1 Samuel, what they're wanting to do is, if you were to follow the story in order, you will see that the person, Samson, in the book of Judges, and Samuel, they seem to have happened around the same time. They were a similar moment in time. And so the writer is wanting to draw some deliberate connection between the two. Firstly, they were both, Samson and Samuel, they were both born to barren women. Both of them were Nazarites, which means that they were dedicated to God. Both of them, both parents vowed that their children would serve God. Both were meant to deliver Israel from the Philistines. Their names are even similar, Samson and Samuel, right? You might not know the story of Samson, right? Samson failed. Samson fell short. He was meant to do all these things. He was meant to hold to his vow. He was meant to not get his hair cut. He was meant to deliver Israel, but he failed. He fell short, unlike Samuel. Samuel and his mother, they were the ones who trusted God's promises. He was the one who would go and anoint the great king of Israel. The mother who God made cry, the one who was honest with God, who knew her story wasn't over, she had the son who wasn't a Samuel but a Samson. A son who wouldn't hold to his desires and fail like Samson, but who would hold to God's desires and succeed. I wonder if Hannah expected her son to do what he did. I wonder what her expectation was. Like, what was she expecting? He might be a nice guy. I hope he's going to the temple. I hope he wants to live for Jesus. We wouldn't have been living for Jesus at the time. But I hope he does follow God. I hope he does give his life to God. I wonder if she placed her expectations really, really low. She might have had them high. We don't know. But where are you placing your expectation of what God can do in your life? Hannah's story of grace in her life points to one place. It's meant to point us in one direction, and it is that to experience grace beyond expectation is to point us to the cross. That's where she's pointing us to. It points to God's Son who would hold to his Father's desires rather than his own. It points to God's Son who prayed prayers of honesty and anguish in a garden before he is about to be murdered. It points to God's Son who knew death on the cross did not mean that his story was over. The story was just the beginning. This encouragement we see in Hannah, it doesn't mean that we get what we want. This is not a story if we get what we want. It's a reminder that on the cross, God offers grace beyond our expectation. He offers us grace beyond our expectation. Names mean a lot in the Bible. Hannah's name means grace. So verse 20, you could read is that grace gave birth to Samuel. It's beautiful. It's amazing. So too does the death on the cross and the resurrection of Jesus give the privilege of us being able to call Jesus our friend and call God our Father. Yeah, the death and resurrection gives birth. Yeah, Christ's grace gives birth to new life for us. Just as Hannah came into God's space, and she shared honestly, so can we, through Jesus, our brother, come and share honestly with God. Just as Hannah knew her story wasn't over, through grace, through the cross and death and resurrection of Jesus, we can have purpose and joy in this world, even when God makes us cry and we struggle to be honest. Just as Hannah experienced grace beyond her expectation through the death, life and resurrection of Christ, we too can know this grace and we can enjoy it all the days of our life. Whoever you are, however you have come into church this morning, if you are feeling that your story is over, if you feel like I've got no hope for my kids, no hope for my marriage, no hope, no joy at the moment, I just don't know how I'm going to get through this feeling of my mental health. If you feel that God is making you cry and you're really struggling with that, Hannah is an example that our story is not over. The Christian God is one you can be totally honest with, and that there is grace available beyond your expectation, and you can come and know him this morning. And so I'm going to invite the band up. We're going to worship Jesus. That's what we're going to do to end this morning. We got a bit of time. We're just going to come into his presence and be encouraged today. So let's stand. Why don't we stand? And the band are going to play. And what I want us to do, I feel that there are people this morning whose stories and circumstances, you're just wrestling. You're wrestling at the moment. You're not sure. You feel that your story is over. Or you're not really sure what's happening. You're struggling to be honest with God. And so what I want to do this morning is the band are going to play. And as they play, I want you just to pray. Like, this is your chance to come to God. We never really have these moments in our daily life to just rest in God. To just wait on God. And be quiet. Or to pour out our hearts to God. So wherever you are, whatever your situation is, why don't we, just across the room, it just helps us to concentrate on God. Why don't we close our eyes? And I'm going to stop talking in a minute. But I want you to just have a moment where you just share where in your story you're struggling.
where in your circumstances you're struggling, and share that with God. And as you share that with God, that you come to a place where you just really appreciate His grace in a new and a fresh way.